And now, Lifestyles Unlimited presents the Real Estate Investor Radio Show. Over the next hour, we unfold your map to financial freedom. You'll learn how to retire through investing in single-family and multifamily real estate. You'll learn how to create cash flow and build wealth so you can have the time and money to live the lifestyle you want.
Welcome to the show. My name is Al Gordon, and as always, we're working on your financial freedom. It's another edition of Tell Al Tuesday. I've asked John to join me again. Now, you've heard John on this radio show before, so if his voice sounds familiar, do not change the dial, because at the end of the day, John is going to share with you information that nobody else is willing to share with you. It's part of the culture at Lifestyles Unlimited. Oh, by the way, Lifestyles Unlimited is an organization that John and I both belong to. It's an organization that changed his life. It changed my life. It's changing the lives of the 50,000 members within the Lifestyles Unlimited culture. And here's the other thing you need to understand. Within that culture, we share information. That's part of the reason we do these radio shows, is to give you information that nobody else is giving you. I would be hard-pressed to find somebody else that's doing as good of a job as we're doing, sharing the good news of real estate investing to you, somebody that needs to understand the good news of real estate investing. Because you think real estate investing takes a lot of time, it takes a lot of money, it's just way outside of your comfort level. And I'm here to tell you, that's not really true. If you know John's backstory, and you'll hear his backstory in just a moment, you'll understand that he got started in real estate at a very young age. He was about, 18 years of age when he started this real estate investing journey. And he started it in lieu of going to college. Now, why did he do that? Well, I think he's got a very good answer for why he did that, and we'll ask him that question. But more importantly, what I want you to understand is that John is just a regular guy like you and me. Ignore the fact that he's won 30 different industry awards from the Houston Apartment Association, from the Texas Apartment Association, from the National Apartment Association. Forget the fact that he's a 9-time winner of Houston's best and brightest companies to work for. Forget the fact that he's got more awards on his chest than I earned in 27 years of serving the United States Army. John is a guy who cares, and he's a guy that likes sharing information with people like you that are trying to figure out whether or not this real estate investing thing works. So let's do this. Let's bring John onto the show. John, welcome back. It's so nice to have you back on the show.
Thank you so much. That was quite the intro to live up to the rest of this hour.
Well, you know, you've got kind of a cult following within Lifestyles Unlimited, because there's a lot of folks that are like in my age group that are looking at guys in your age group and just like cheering you on, because we wish that we had been exposed. That's probably the best way to put it. We had been exposed to what Lifestyles Unlimited exposes us to. Now, you got exposed in a different way than I got exposed. So why don't we talk about that? How did you get started with Lifestyles Unlimited?
Yeah, so it was an awesome story. I grew up in a great family, a great household, awesome parents. And when I graduated high school, my parents gave me the option of using the college savings they had accumulated very graciously to start some kind of a business with, rather than going the traditional route and getting a four-year degree at a traditional college. And I did end up getting a degree online as I was starting the real estate business, but that was the initial goal. And so whenever I graduated high school, we really set out to find some kind of industry or some kind of business to start. And none of us had any kind of experience in real estate or knew much about it. It seemed like a simple enough business to understand. And so kind of stumbled upon Lifestyles through a referral. And then we realized pretty quickly that the education and the programs that Lifestyles offered really allowed us to fast track through what would have been probably a decade of hard knocks learning if we try to go out on our own and just figure it out without any kind of a map or guide. And so we're very gracious for, or very thankful for the experiences we got there. And so we joined again right after I graduated high school and decided to start out with single families and kind of see how, you know, dip our toe in the water a little bit, see how things went. After dipping, we kind of dove right in. We actually got 8 single family homes pretty quick out the gate. And then about a year after joining, I bought our first apartment complex, which was a 50 unit independent owner deal we did just with that our money. And this is a deal that was not a great part of town, and I went down to, I was running that every day and learning the business at 20 years old, and liking it, but also had some struggles. I mean, we bought this thing in 2008, really right before the great financial crisis hit and wiped out real estate values. And so this property was probably worth about half of what we paid for it 6 months after we bought it, which is a tough pill to swallow. That's not a legendary story starting out there. But thanks to, you know, the help and the mentors at Lifestyles, I was able to really grind it out of that property and learn the business and keep that thing just barely profitable through the downturn. And and then about 4 years later, I was able to syndicate my first investment with investors and buy a 200 unit apartment with like a team and staff and a little more of a budget. And then I realized, like, this is what I love doing. This is what I want to make my career, is syndicating deals, having these larger properties and be able to lead a team of people. And so we ended up selling that 50 unit several years later for exactly what we bought it for when the values started to recover, sold the single family houses, and went all in on the bigger apartment complexes. And so I've been able to replicate that process quite a few times. I bought that first big apartment in 2012, it was 200 units with some investors. And then since then, I've bought a deal, you know, every 2 or 3 years. And I now have 7 properties, almost 1,700 units, all in Houston, and a management company that I used to self-manage and operate everything. And it has been an amazing blessing.
So, John, have you ever heard the concept, if you help enough other people get what they want, they in turn will help you get what you want?
Absolutely. That is a phrase that's thrown around Lifestyles often. I've heard Dave Ramsey say the same thing in his Entree Leadership courses, and it's been a big foundational piece of my philosophy as well.
So how does it impact you, and how does it build on your business philosophy?
Yeah, it's really helped me clarify, you know, our purpose and what we're chasing at our business and our company. It can be really common to think that the end all be all goal of a business is just to maximize profit within the bounds of the rules. Whatever we got to do to maximize profit within the bounds of the rules. And I think that philosophy has led to a really negative stereotype on business and corporations and profits, and it doesn't have to be that way. And I think that's a pretty recent development in the business world, period. And so really thinking more of a business as a car that is heading in a direction, and profits are the fuel, the gas in the car. And nobody goes and buys a car just to burn gas, just to make profits, you know, just to drive in a circle because it's fun. You buy a car to get in the car, get other people in the car with you, and look out the front windshield, not at the gas gauge all the time, but look at the front windshield and figure out, where are we going? Why do we want to get there? And so we've really, in our business over the 15 years I've been doing this, have filtered down our mission and vision and purpose and really narrowed it into 3 distinct groups of people we serve, that being our residents that live on our properties, our team members that work in our company, and our investors that give us the money to be able to do this. And constantly serving those 3 and articulating how we do that best has been a fun process, a long process, and one has gone through, you know, many iterations. But we realized that we want to give our residents that choose to live at our communities a clean, functional home where they can thrive and raise their families and make, you know, good memories, and things work and they feel, you know, seen and not just a number on a spreadsheet. And then we want to give our team members a career where they're valued and coached and cared for and empowered to achieve their God-given potential, and they feel like they're really truly part of a team and a family. And then we want to give our investors, we don't promise our investors some sky high, unrealistic returns, like we're going to, you know, double their money every year or anything. But we do prioritize that. Obviously, we want to offer our investors a transparent investing experience where they can enjoy great financial returns, but also know that their investments are being used for a meaningful social impact as well, taking care of the vulnerable people that live in our communities. And so the more I can hone that message and craft that that purpose and that vision, that's where our car is going. And then people want to get in that car. And we use the profits we make to fuel that car and accomplish that mission and do that with excellence and build a team and do it again and build a team and do it again. And that has been a very fulfilling journey that's been enabled and empowered by real estate that is so fulfilling and really feel like we're making an impact.
Now, you've got some teammates that have been with you for quite a while. Why do you think they stick around?
They have stuck with me through some really dark times and dumb decisions, and I'm really grateful and loyal to them. I've actually got three people on my team that were part of my original five-person team, and they're still with me today. Very, very grateful for that. And I think it's just a matter of trying, you know, as a leader, I don't do this well all the time, but my goal is trying to be a leader that is safe, consistent, exciting, trustworthy. You know, if you can be that's somebody that people want to follow. And like I said, I certainly mess it up all the time. But as best I can, being a trustworthy person who able to delegate well and empower people, I hope feel that I am for them. I am on their team. And when, you know, I can't succeed without them. I want them to be the best they can be. And when they see us putting resources and energy behind that intent and desire, it really makes them feel appreciated and cared for.
You know, I noticed you didn't use the word perfect. You completely omitted that word. Why do you think that's important?
I think it's a absolutely unrealistic expectation. I don't think anybody's perfect. We are all going to make mistakes all the time. It's not a matter of when. It's not a matter of if. It's a matter of when. And the real question is not, are you perfect? It's when you're not, how do you respond? And do you have a strong enough drive and purpose and end goal to get up off the floor and keep moving forward when it's not fun in that moment? And there's plenty of times when it's not fun. It's not all peaches and roses all the time. And so, we chase perfection. We never achieve it. We hope for excellence. We want people to deal with us to think they do an excellent job, and there's not, laziness or sloppiness or anything like that in our culture. We work hard, we play hard, and we care for people deeply.
So I've got a question for you, and this is concerning somebody that's coming at real estate investing from a completely different approach than the way you did it or the way I did it. This is somebody that's working in a W-2 job. They're working real hard for somebody else. They've got business skill sets, but they're concerned about the transferability of those skill sets into what we do. What are your thoughts on that transferability of skill sets?
Man, with the training and the education and the resources, the mentoring available at an organization like Lifestyles, I would tell that individual, man, don't sweat knowing how to do it well. You can figure that out. There are people that will help you. And I think having that map already laid out is such a huge advantage. And you know, another phrase around Lifestyles all the time is real estate is easy, people are hard. And so if you have people skills in any other business and you can know how to play well with others and how to communicate and those kinds of things, you're good to go. Like don't sweat figuring out how to operate a piece of real estate and operate a property well. We have the tools for that.
So basically your advice is get in the game, come check out Lifestyles Unlimited, become a member, go through the education, immerse yourself in the education, then immerse yourself in what we do, and then just turn yourself loose because you're probably going to be great at it.
Yeah, I mean, look, my story, I got in the game the worst possible time in the market. My first big investment was worth half of what we paid for it in 6 months. But real estate is so forgiving and the education is so good. I was able to, grind it out and be able to recover that investment fully and sell it for the same thing we paid it for. What other business can you do that? What other business can you mess up that poorly or time things that poorly and not sink the ship and be okay? And as it's not an easy street ticket. You got to put in the work to learn, and it's not a machine that you just kind of wind up and let loose. It takes work, but it is possible, and you can do it.
How important was the mentorship in the beginning?
Having so many mentors, both just other members and official consultants at Lifestyles, gave me a vision of what was possible, like what the light at the end of the tunnel, what could be achieved if I stuck through it. And that's what really got me through those hard times at the beginning, is the network there.
Yeah, the network is, well, it's intense. There's no other way to describe it. Hey, when we come back from the break, we're going to ask him about some of these awards that he's earned. Stick around.
Lifestyles Unlimited's Real Estate Investor Radio Show returns in a moment. Got questions? Go to lifestylesunlimited.com.
The Lifestyles Unlimited team of real estate investing mentors and educators want to meet you. Learn to retire in 5 years or less. Text the word radio to 88007. That's radio to 88007. Join for just $297. Lifestyles Unlimited.
Creating the lifestyle you've always wanted. You're hearing Lifestyles Unlimited's Real Estate Investor Radio Show.
Welcome back to the second half of the Lifestyles Unlimited Real Estate Investor Radio Show. My name is Al Gordon. I'm joined by John, and together we're working on your financial freedom. And what we're going to do is I'm going to ask John a question about some of his awards and accolades, because I think you should understand that he's not just really good at what he does as a real estate investor, but there are other people that recognize how good he is at doing this business. So he's won 30 different awards. Is that the current number, John, 30?
I think we're somewhere between 30 and 35 at this point. I'm not sure, but it's above 30. I don't know if we've quite hit 35 yet, somewhere in there.
How long did it take you to get award number one? Was that something that you overnight you were an instantaneous success, or did it take some time to build up to?
It took some time to build up to, for sure. I remember putting in for the award a couple of years before we got it. And those first couple of years were, disheartening a little bit, but at the same time, the people that won it were super deserving. So I wasn't too heartbroken over it. But I do remember that the first time I won the Houston Owner of the Year Award, that was so fulfilling, and it was so fun for the team and me. Just very like affirming that, hey man, we are doing something right. Like, this is working. This is special. And then to go on the next year and win the Owner of the Year for Texas, and then the Owner of the Year for the nation that same year. We still talk about how fun that trip was to go to Vegas and go to the conference and receive that award on stage. And it just hits different. It builds your confidence, a good bit. But at the same time, like every other award in life, it fades, and you show up to work the next week and it's the same job, and you still got to do an excellent job, and nothing changed. And so it's a good confidence booster. It's a great, great reminder that your team is moving forward. It's a great team building, let's rally around and celebrate and have a good time. But it's not the end all be all. You still got to continue delivering excellence and not get complacent and remember what got you there in the first place.
So do you find the teammates are maybe nervous that you've won so many awards that maybe there's some extra pressure put on them to excel beyond what maybe they're able to do?
I don't know if there's any kind of like negative pressure or anything like that. I do think it does elevate the bar in our company to say, like, hey, we are an award winning, the bar is that we win the best property in the city. And, most of our properties have won the Property of the Year award. And so it does establish an excellence expectation, a level of excellence as the expectation that I think is healthy. But we try really hard not to make it a negative pressure or a negative, like, hey, you better get your act together and win this award or anything like that. We try to use it as a positive reinforcer, and more than anything, a time to celebrate and recognize those who worked really, really hard to win it.
Now, you spent some time serving the real estate community as the president of the Apartment Association for Houston. Why did you decide to do that?
Man, I've been really blessed by the Houston Apartment Association and my involvement there. It's, you know, given a lot and gained a lot. And really, it's a great complement to the training you get at a place like Lifestyles Unlimited. You know, Lifestyles and other groups, but Lifestyles does such a great job of training you how to operate a property and how to, you know, the mechanics of improving value and making a property profitable. And then the complementary thing that you can get from something like the Apartment Association is seeing the industry as a whole, as a bigger picture, and learning what it means to lead a company and lead an organization, and get to rub shoulders with and make contacts with executives at companies that are running 20 and 30 and 50,000 units, and figuring out, like, hey, how do y'all do things? What are y'all looking at? What do you prioritize when making a decision? And serving on committees with those groups is super valuable. And I've made some great friends there that I still communicate with, you know, very often. I'm still on the board and chair some committees, and I'll plan to continue to be involved. To stay on the front lines of new developments and where the industry is going. And I was blessed to be able to become the president of the Apartment Association in 2021. I was the youngest president that HAA has ever had. And in a pretty eventful year, you know, this was a little bit 1 year after COVID had really broken onto the scene. And so everybody's trying to figure out what it meant to operate in this new COVID environment. And now they had their youngest association president ever at the helm. And so it was a great, I really appreciated all the help from past presidents and other industry leaders to help get us through that year, and to be on the front lines of, you know, how our industry was responding to the many different challenges that year was extremely beneficial for, you know, my company and my circle of influence, and getting to shape city policies and rental assistance programs with the city of Houston was really eye-opening and grew me a lot.
Yeah, and I think your efforts helped the industry immensely. So I want to thank you on behalf of the Lifestyles Unlimited community for all your efforts as part of being a part of that board and doing the hard work that you did, especially in a very difficult time. So thanks, John. We do appreciate everything that you've done.
Thank you.
So let me switch gears on you, because, I mean, have you been paying attention to what's going on in the real estate markets lately?
I do my best to keep on the front lines of that. It's been an interesting roller coaster.
So what are you seeing? I mean, I'll just kind of give you a hint as to what I'm seeing. I'm seeing that on the seller side of the equation, it appears that there's still a lot of unrealistic expectations about price, because when I'm trying to price stuff on the buyer's side, I can't afford to pay what a lot of people want me to pay. And being a pleasing person that I am, I try and do that, but I can't do that at the expense of the deal. Am I off in my thinking?
No, I think that's a really common sentiment right now. You know, I'm in an interesting situation where I'm, you know, actively looking for more deals to buy, and at the same time, I'm kind of thinking about selling one of my properties and kind of looking at what those options might be. So I'm kind of on both sides of that equation, and I can understand what we call the bid-ask gap in the market right now. That being, there's sellers selling properties that are asking a certain price, and there's buyers willing to bid a certain price, and the gap between the bid and the asking price is pretty big right now in most cases, which just means not a ton of deals getting done. I do think that's changing, and in talking with brokers and other people in the market right now, it seems like there's a lot more deal volume starting to pick up. So I think we're on the downhill side of that dynamic, and that's part of that is the, you know, lenders have been slowly coming to grips with the fact that these properties, the value has dropped significantly since the peak in like 21, 22, you know, maybe first part of 23, and dropped often below the loan value, meaning the properties, not all of them, but a good amount of properties now are not worth the loan that was put on them in those peak valuation periods in like 21 and 22. And that's a real hard pill for sellers and lenders to swallow, but they're slowly coming around to that and starting to putting more and more pressure on the owners of these distressed assets to sell or foreclose or make a transaction happen. And so I think we're on the front side of a lot of maybe distressed sales or some people just being maybe forced to sell and at some level of loss, which is a sad situation for them to be in. But it will likely facilitate more transactions happening. We'll get a better realization of where market values are really at. And so I'm personally more optimistic that I'll be able to find some more opportunities to buy in the next, 6 to 24 months now than I have been in many years.
Where are you getting your leads from? I mean, do you have relationships with brokers? Do you call on ads? How do you find the properties that you're looking to buy?
That is always the linchpin in the process is where do you find the deals? Where do you find the deals? And the answer is yes, all those things you said. There are brokerages that put deals for sale on their websites. There's probably the most prolific source as far as volume goes, is just getting on the right email distribution lists. Many brokers all over the country that are selling deals would love nothing more than to let you know about them. And so if you can get on the right email distribution lists to find out about when they list a deal for sale. Just industry contacts. I've been doing this for 15 years. It is pretty common now for me to find out about a deal for sale and I tried to buy that deal 5, 6, 7 years ago. I've probably already got a file on it and I go pull up that file and just update the numbers and I can make a more updated offer on it now. So I'm in a phase of my career now where I'm making offers on properties for the second or third time in some cases. And as deals I've been watching for a while or wanting for a while, so I can underwrite them and decide if I want to buy them or not pretty quickly. With smaller deals, like if you're looking for something that's maybe 8, 10, 20 units, that's a little bit trickier. You can find out about those, sometimes on brokers, sometimes on different websites. There's not really like a database of those kinds of properties. So that's more of a you're just being out there and networking a ton to try to get on the right call lists for those kinds of opportunities. And then the bigger deals, 100, 150 units and above, those usually have a little more of a formal process where they're going to go through, a listing process and take offers and just like the finalists and things like that. And so it's a little more of a formalized process, but there's still some of those deals that happen off market as well. So it's just a matter of, doing as much networking as possible, getting on as many distribution lists as possible, and staying just plugged into kind of where the market's trending.
So really, it's all about not being lazy. It's about creating relationships with people that want to have relationships with you so that they can transact property with you and they can make money, you can make money, and that's kind of the way the whole thing works, right?
And that's exactly right. It's all about people and relationships.
So let me ask you a question about 2008 versus now. I mean, you're one of the few guys that I know that has gone through both cycles, so to speak. I mean, we're still technically going through the current cycle, but you lived through the 2008 down cycle of real estate, and you lived through the rebirth of real estate on the other side. Is there anything that you're seeing in this current cycle that's making you flash back to the former cycle?
Probably the biggest thing is like we just haven't had hardly any foreclosures on the market in many years. I mean, there was just almost nothing coming across. And now for the first time in a long time, we're starting to see those foreclosure lists build. And it's just indicative of lenders starting to put pressure on owners that have gotten delinquent or their property metrics are falling. Even if they're paying the mortgage, if they're not keeping up with the condition of the property or if their metrics aren't doing well, they'll start taking a closer look at that because they remember 2008 as well. So the lenders are starting to apply some pressure. I would say the biggest difference between the two scenarios is, in 2008, that crisis, values dropped and no one had any money. There was a lack of liquidity. Like if you could find liquidity and find a lender to get a deal done, it was going to be a good deal because the prices were so low. The different scenario we have this time is people have money, people have liquidity, and it's going to put a floor on how low values are going to drop. And I certainly don't think we're going to see the kind of drop in values that we did back in 2008. There will be great deals, and I think it's a great time to buy. Don't get me wrong, but I don't think there's going to be the bloodbath that was present in 2008, just because there's a different dynamic with the banks have money. There's plenty of people who have raised funds, and their liquidity is waiting on the sidelines, ready to go whenever the deals start making sense. And so it's not going to be this same dynamic exactly like it was in 2008. Although I think it's certainly fantastic opportunities.
What about the people that are trying to time the bottom of this market? Do you think that they're onto something, or do you think they should just get involved with the market?
We heard the phrase plenty of times before. Trying to time the bottom is like trying to catch a falling knife. You're probably going to get cut. I've been doing this a long time, and I've certainly thought we've hit the bottom several times, and I'm pretty bad at predicting that. And so I've moved past that. I'm not trying to find the bottom of the market or anything like that. I just look at every deal in light of current market conditions, in light of current, expenses, where things are at, where rents are going, and just say, does this deal make sense right now? And if the deal makes sense right now and we can, cash flow well and hit our return targets, then let's go. I'm ready to go. I don't care if the market keeps dropping. I'm going to be okay, and I'll just catch it on the upswing on the other side. So I think getting realistic in your underwriting and making sure you're not, planning on raising rents 15% when the market rents are only going up 2% or zero or something like that. That's foolish. We don't want to do that. But as long as you're smart with your underwriting, smart with your lending, not getting trapped with some kind of an adjustable rate loan that's going to balloon or something where you're getting a pickle, you have to transact when you don't want to. As long as you're conservative in your underwriting, the metrics make sense, the deal, the underwriting makes sense. Don't worry about the market timing being perfect or anything like that. You're not that good. I'm not that good. And so just focus on if the deal makes sense and then go for it.
Yeah, I think you're spot on, because at the end of the day, the deal of the century comes along once a week. I mean, that's what I found. Have you found that to be true?
I will say, probably the better analogy is I've got 7 properties, and a few of them are will struggle at sometimes. A few of them are kind of middle of the lane, hitting their numbers, and then a few of them are absolute unicorns that make a ton of money and have been wildly profitable. And all my projected returns on all those deals looked about the same. I can't go back at the initial underwriting and find any kind of indication that the superstars were going to be superstars and the struggling deals were going to be struggling. And by struggling, just means they're just chugging along. But my point in that is trying to find some kind of indication of when a deal is going to take off and be a superstar is really, really hard. And I think it just stick to the basics, blocking and tackling, underwrite a deal well, conservatively. And if you happen to hit a timing perfectly and values go way up and you hit a home run, thank God for that and run with it.
Hey, John, I want to thank you so much for taking time out of your schedule to be a part of what we're doing here on this radio show. I think somebody listening to us learned something very valuable from you. And here's the amazing thing. When they become a member of Lifestyles Unlimited and they get to know you, they can continue the learning. If you want to do what John's doing, you want to do what I'm doing, you want to do what the 50,000 members of Lifestyles Unlimited are doing, go to lifestylesunlimited.com, sign up for a free workshop, and let's get you going.
Thank you for listening to Lifestyles Unlimited's Real Estate Investor Radio Show. Ready for more of the map? Visit lifestylesunlimited.com. Explore our videos and articles. Click on the radio tab to access past show podcasts. View the radio show schedule and listen to our best of radio shows. Want to continue the conversation? Follow Lifestyles Unlimited on Facebook today. We want to meet you as well. Sign up for a free workshop at LifestylesUnlimited.com. Until next time, remember, it's not the money, it's the lifestyle.
The information and opinions you hear on the Lifestyles Unlimited Real Estate Investor Radio Show are those of the hosts, guests, and callers and do not necessarily reflect the opinions of this station, its affiliates, its management, or advertisers. The Lifestyles Unlimited Real Estate Investor Radio Show is for entertainment purposes only. Please consult a professional regarding your personal investment needs. Nothing presented on the Lifestyles Unlimited Real Estate Investor Radio Show constitutes an endorsement, recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or security.